lot harder than it looks. And that's the final message.
Ralph Casa, President of Pacific Forum, thank you so much. And thank you all, listeners. We'll see you next Tuesday for another program on Asia. Have a safe drive home.
Thank you for listening to Pacific Forum CSIS's Issues and Insights, part of ThinkTech Radio's Focus on Asia Tuesdays with your host, international business lawyer David Day. This show is for informational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute legal advice to any listener, guest, or other party. If you need legal advice about a specific business situation, you should contact an attorney. Learn more about ThinkTech Hawaii and its mission at thinktechhawaii.com. And tune in tomorrow for ThinkTech Radio's Technology and Media Wednesday.
Hawaii's Business Authority, KGU, Honolulu.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Covering the financial and business news you need to know.
With SRN News, I'm Patrick Foss. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker survived a recall election, defeating the Democratic mayor of Milwaukee to keep the state's top political job. SRN News political analyst Gary Bauer says this vote involved more than just financial principles.
Economics, of course, was the big issue, but I think it would be a mistake to write off values. When voters in most of the country have a choice between a clear liberal and a clear conservative, in most places, including in some surprising places, they'll pick the conservative.
The Republican governor rose to national prominence last year after taking on public sector union shortly after being sworn in. That fight triggered the recall, with more than 60% of the precincts reporting Walker was ahead 57-42%. Also at SRNews.com, appearing in the PBS NewsHour, former President Bill Clinton was asked if he agrees with the Obama campaign's recent ads attacking Mitt Romney's time at Bain Capital.
You'd have to know about a specific case to know whether it was a good or a bad thing. But there are a lot of good people in that business doing good things.
Democrats have joined House Republicans in opposition to a White House plan to shut down the Yucca Mountain nuclear waste site.
Members of both parties pushing a measure to continue the licensing process for Yucca Mountain despite White House opposition. Illinois Republican John Shimkus.
This is an outrageous unilateral decision to stop Yucca and not spend funds specifically appropriated for licensing activities.
Washington State Democrat Norm Dix.
We passed the law, said do Yucca Mountain. And that law has not been repealed. That's still the law of the land.
Dix called the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's decision an affront to the Constitution. Wally Hines, Capitol Hill.
A U.S. drone strike in northwest Pakistan has killed Al-Qaeda's second in command.
This is a very dangerous individual, and for him to no longer be walking the earth would be a good thing for everybody.
Pentagon spokesman Captain John Kirby. Officials from both countries now confirm his death. This is SRN News.
This is an important message for men of all ages who are losing their hair. There's been a major discovery recently about the true cause of hair loss and male pattern baldness and how to treat it. It's called the Meliniac Method, and it's already got a worldwide following on the internet with over 20,000 websites referring to it. There are no drugs, no lotions, and no surgery involved. It says that what triggers hair loss is a tight layer of the scalp called the galea. We only go bald where the galea exists, and this is the true culprit in hair loss. So if you want to stop your hair loss and grow back your hair, use the Meliniac Method. Then you can throw away that hat that you've been wearing in 90-degree weather and get your confidence back. And remember, it uses no drugs, no lotions, and no surgery. It is not expensive, and it really works. Go to their website at bornagainhair.com. That's bornagainhair.com, or call 1-855-900-HAIR. That's 1-855-900-HAIR.
Remember when you were 17, in great shape and feeling good? Not a care in the world. Well, here it is today, and there's a growing family to take care of. Of course, you've done some growing, too. But many of us do gain weight as we get older. 20, 30 pounds, 40, but 100 pounds? Deep down inside, you know how serious it is. So it's the right time to get back into shape and be there for your family. The Surgical Weight Loss Institute at Castle Medical Center is staffed by caring experts and the only center of excellence for bariatric surgery in Hawaii. Not only will they share their proven surgical weight loss plan, they'll help you through diet, exercise, and education. At Castle Medical Center, the doctors and nurses are more than just experts. They're lifestyle coaches who understand how much you want to be there for your son's graduation, your daughter's wedding, every baby luau that follows. Sound good? Good. Take the first step and visit castlemed.org or call 263-5176. Castle Medical Center, exceptional medicine by exceptional people.
Aloha, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy here. A breath of fresh air is what you need on your afternoon drive home, not the boring windbags. Can I say that? Tune in Monday through Friday. That's Lice Tomorrow, 5 to 6 p.m., 760 KGU. Aloha.
Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, presents Hawaii's Tomorrow, a series of discussions about Hawaii's business future, led by experts in their respective fields. Today's contributing host is the man himself, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Aloha, welcome. And let's repeat the word aloha, the most important word in my opinion in the English, French, Spanish, Chinese language. Any language accepts the word aloha, just the whole karmic sound of it. I would say the Vedas, Kama Sutra? Can I say that on the air? The Upanishads, that is a word. Just listen to it. Aloha. I mean, come on. Mantra out. And aloha to all of you on every island. Your Solar Guy, quote-unquote Jeff Davis, here today in a good mood. Yesterday's show was a breeze with Kevin from 12th Avenue Grill Salt and Stefano from Sabrina's Restaurant, two restaurants which I frequent quite often, and we're talking food security. I might even get a free meal out of it. You never know. Today's show is going to blow your mind. I've got a brain trust in here with me today. Four people, doctors, this and that. You'll see. I'm gonna put them on and introduce them in just one moment. You know what we do. Try to educate you on your way home, that little slice of pie where you're stuck behind the wheel. You know, traffic is my friend. My guess, I would like for you to understand, traffic is our friend, you see, because it traps them all in. And by the way, with that in mind, let's get UH back to school, because there's no traffic on the roads right now, gang. You want to talk rail? You want to talk traffic issues? Well, first of all, if you're going to build one, please build one to UH, because right now there's no traffic on the road because UH is out. Jesus. Figure out some way to mitigate that. And if you're going to build a rail, build it to UH. Another thing, in the paper today, article by Richard Bereka about solar tax credits. My guests are looking at me like, what the hell are we doing here? Economist lambates energy's tax policy. We're going to be addressing that heavily, obviously. I am the Solar Guy. These guys came out with information that's just so... I'll tell you what, let's segue into my show with that, because we're here to do exactly the same thing, educate. All right? Because how can you have a better Hawaii's tomorrow if you're not educated? With that in mind, I'd like to, well, first of all, let me introduce Carly Weiner. Now, Carly, aloha and thanks for coming in.
Aloha, Jeff.
And you are my co-host when it comes to marine biology. I appreciate that. We met at an ocean water sports basically convention.
The Ocean Expo, yeah.
And your title?
I'm the program manager for COSI Island Earth, which stands for Centers for Ocean Sciences and Education Excellence.
All right. Now, when I asked you today, because you hosted my show when I was out of town not too long ago.
Correct.
Great job from what I heard.
Thanks.
Thank you. And I asked you, well, what is this COSI Island thing do? And you said, we educate. I said, damn, give me some money. Because I pay for the show. Now, you're coming to educate on my show. I'd love to see you once a month. You and your ilk, right? Maybe your cohorts. And you're the one that's rounded up this prestigious group of my guests today.
I brought you a powerhouse of people.
This is
today.
Cool. You guys, for those of you out there, I'm beating the bush, but we're going to be talking about the whale sanctuary, the monk seal issues, the Northwest Archipelago's largest marine, whatchamacallit on the planet, right?
One of the largest one marine protected areas.
Papahanao Mokuakea, and that Dr. Robert Tunin, Rob Tunin, associate researcher, UH, lead investigator for
the partnership with the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries with the University of Hawaii.
And I presume research. In simple terms, you guys are trying to manage and nurture and take care of that up and do scientific research up there in the north.
We're trying to provide the information to the manager so that they can make the best decisions possible.
And, of course,
that
would have to do with the fisheries, et cetera.
That's right. And even just access. Papahanaumokuakea is off limits without permits to actually enter that, and they need information about why.
I need information about why. Why the hell can't I take a boat up there?
Well, it's one of the most pristine areas.
And?
Well, it doesn't stay that way if you have a lot of people traipsing through. It starts to look like Waikiki.
I was a commercial fisherman up there. We go up there for 3-4 weeks at a time. We'd rarely see another boat unless it was some illegal trawler coming in there and trawling through. Occasionally a Coast Guard ship. Occasionally. And we were trying to hide from each other since we're looking for fish, right? Yeah. It's not like it's close by and that there's access to it and then you can take a taxi up there.
That's true, but now with these large factory ships that they often spend months and months at sea, and those things could.
But those things were not legally allowed up there for decades.
That's something that they're still trying to fight.
If somebody wanted to go up there and birdwatch, since there's a whole bunch of them up there.
Well, technically, Jeff, you could do that because there are some limited permits that you can apply for special uses at Midway Atoll. So that is a possibility. And
Midway.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about Papahanaumokuakea is it's a large protected area. And we need larger protected areas in order to replenish our ocean resources.
I beg your pardon. Maybe it's because I used to be a fisherman. Just the whole idea of, well, you can't go there even if you're just there to sightsee bothers me. Let's move on to something more important, shall we? I told you, interrupt me.
And I will.
Okay. Again, Dr. Rob Tunin, thanks for coming in. And an expert on a part of our Hawaiian heritage and our state. I mean, this is the chain, the volcanic chain that goes all the way up to Alaska.
It does. And so it goes as far as Kure Atoll, and then that's the last of the emergent islands, and then the Emperor Seamount chain goes all the way up and sinks in underneath Alaska.
And, of course, because of this deep water being forced up and all the different seamounts, the sea life and biology is just off the hook in its volume. Am I not mistaken, ancient Hawaiians used to go up there, camp out, and dry fish before they come back home?
It was a very sacred place to the Hawaiians, and I think that anyone who's had the privilege of going up there can understand why, that it is just a spiritual experience anyone.
I've been there. I spent a year and a half of my life there. And it's like being in the middle of the Amazon jungle. Of course, the jungle's underwater, but there's so much of it, it just permeates the world. Okay, again, Dr. Rob, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Also, this is a beautiful thing. Aaliyah Herman, State Co-Manager, Hawaiian Island Humpback Whale Sanctuary. What's your official title?
You got it right. State
All right.
Co-Manager.
So you're helping to manage the Humpback Whale Sanctuary.
That's right. Yeah, the sanctuary is co-managed by the federal government through NOAA and by the state government through the DLNR.
You're actually Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Exactly. Yeah, and the whole thing is set up, the way the sanctuary is set up in all sanctuaries is when it's in state waters, we only have what we have in state waters because the governor has given his or her approval. So as a state, if we don't want it there, it doesn't have to be there. So this is really an opportunity for us as the state to say, okay, how do we take these federal resources, this federal expertise, this federal money, and use it to help protect Hawaii, the state of Hawaii's resources? So that's really where that nexus is. How can we work together, the state and the federal government, to do the best things for Hawaii?
But it's interesting because those whales seem to be taking care of themselves from the civilian point of view, myself.
They are doing. The whales are doing great.
There's like too many of them. Let's run a few over.
Ooh, I don't know.
Ooh, stink eye.
Oh, yeah.
But no, the point being, I'm curious, why do we spend and why are we willing to pass laws and open sanctuaries and limit some sort of freedoms and whatnot and take so much care about the whales, which are just damn well taking care of themselves? Why we ignore our opakapaka, our onshore reefs? I mean, our reefs should look like Hanama Bay. And the only reason they don't is because we overfished them. Obviously, we're not out there catching whales to eat. Why? Let's save that question. I'm being rude. Okay. Let me introduce my last guest, Charles Littinen. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Lead scientist for NOAA Fisheries and the Hawaiian Monk Seal Research Program. The monk seal, you are the envy of everybody else. The monk seal is sexy.
Wow, that is.
I blush.
I agree.
Such a nerve. Closer to the mic.
I've never heard it put that way before. And a lot of people we talk to, maybe
they're
not
furry,
envious.
They're warm, they're cozy, they bite. I mean, it's neat.
Yeah,
they're a mammal,
and they smell.
They have fur, not like those stinky whales.
Whales have fur, or they have hair. They have hair.
Okay.
You're making an enemy
Carly,
here.
Carly, why don't you open it up on what you feel is the number one subject that you'd like to speak to. We're going to just talk briefly. You know what? Forget it. Let's go to traffic now so we don't interrupt it. When I come back again, Carly Weiner's going to basically take over the show and run us through this impressive group of folks that we've got here to educate us. And I'll just be dummy once in a while and say something stupid just to try to keep their little bit of an entertainment value going. We're going to get a great education today. I'm your solar guy, Jeff. Thanks to my guests for coming in. And as I go out to break, I'm going to thank some folks who helped pay for the show. I'd like to thank my board operator for turning the music on. Thank you, Michelle. And D.R. Horton Schuler. Talk to them today about the controversial Ho'opili. This Friday, the Land Use Commission will be giving their, I guess they'll be voting on whether or not they'll be allowed to go forward with their development of 11,000 homes on the Eva Plain and all the different various issues regarding that. I'd like to thank UH Federal Credit Union. As you well know, they're doing a 2% home equity loan, so buy green stuff. For me, for instance, I had a client yesterday. This guy putting $40,000, bring his electric bill $20-$50 a month down, and his payment on the loan is only less than $200. So they've amateurized for 20 years. It's genius. Of course, they listen to me. Duh. Island Cooling, Whitworth Brothers, Al, Ivan, these are the Whole House fan guys. You'll see all of us in the Blaisdell this weekend. We're going to be doing the Home and Garden Show. I'll be in there being a solar guy, and the Whitworth Brothers will be in there cooling your house off with a Whole House Attic fan, and it really works. Everybody on my website, hawaiistomorrow.com. You can link up. Young Brothers, thank you, Glenn Hong, for participating yesterday in our food security show. Blue Planet Foundation, Jeff Michelina, you're going to be coming in real soon in regards to this article by Richard Barekat. Since you guys sponsored a study by an economist, Mr. Lauder, showing that solar credits actually did positive financial impact for the state, and here we are reading the opposite. I would like to thank the Solar Training Institute, accelerated training classes, people considering a career change. I'm your solar guy, and I'll be right back. Aloha.
Hawaii's Business Authority.
It was already slow on the Moanalua Freeway, and now we've got an accident making it even worse. The accident's westbound at the Pu'uloa exit. The Moanalua is backed up to Middle Street. If you're taking the H1, the slowdown starts at the airport on-ramp on the viaduct. Further out, the H1 is solid through IAA. It does let up after the Waimalu Pearl City exit. Inbound traffic slows at Middle Street from the east. The slowdown starts at McCulley.
280,000 acres. That's the size of Molokai, Lanai, and Kahoolawe put together. It's also the amount of the prime farmable ag land designated in Hawaii. 280,000 acres. That's a lot of prime farmable ag land, and it needs to be preserved for agriculture. Aloha, I'm Dean Okimoto of Nalo Farms, and this fact is brought to you by Ho'opili, a new community where commercial farms, neighborhood, and home gardens will be part of the community's design. And there's so much more. Log on to www.ho'opili'oahu.com.
Over the past century, more than 90% of koa forests in Hawaii have disappeared as tropical hardwood prices have skyrocketed. Hawaii's koa forests are an important part of our ecosystem and a symbol of our island heritage. Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Hawaii's Tomorrow need your help to repopulate 1,000 acres on the Big Island with new koa trees. For $60, you can sponsor your very own koa legacy tree on the slopes of Mauna Kea. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Along with a beautifully engraved personalized certificate, $20 will also be donated to the charity or organization of your choice. Gift a gift that grows grander year after year. And see how simple the act of planting a tree can change the face of the planet. To plant your Hawaiian Koa Legacy Tree, go to hawaiistomorrow.com and click on the Legacy Tree icon. Again, hawaiistomorrow.com. That's Hawaii's with an S, tomorrow.com.
Aloha! This is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. The solar industry has changed enormously in the last 3 years. So many companies have entered the market that one of the most asked questions I hear is, what makes your company different? Solar Services Hawaii has been serving Oahu and neighbor islands for more than 20 years. Solar Services was awarded the best inspection rate statewide from the Hot Water Rebate Program. We were number one. Solar Services is a local family company. We recognize the need for service with
Aloha. I personally have given a class for the IRS. I've lectured many, including two luncheons with the National Association of Tax Preparers. Roof penetration and tax issues are my focus. For all solar products, meaning hot water, photovoltaic, pool and spa heating, solar pool pumps, solar attic fans, you name it. We specialize in photovoltaics and hot water. And of course, a free estimate is available. Just call my phone, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. You have a great day and aloha.
If you think you've got a great story to tell and would like to be a guest on the show, call Jeff at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Aloha, welcome back to Hawaii's Tomorrow. And as usual, I'm in over my head. I'll introduce my guests, and then I'll let my co-host, Carly Weiner, Program Director for Kosi Island Earth Center for Ocean Sciences, Education, and Excellence. In other words, the educational part, the outreach program to the community, which is why you belong here, Carly.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
I'll let her take over, and we're going to be talking again with Mr. Rob Tunin, the Associate Researcher for the or lead investigator for Northwest Archipelago, the Papahanoa Mokoa Kea. I'm going to make about $10 before I get this thing right. I get paid $1 every time I try. And Aaliyah Herman, State Co-Manager, Hawaiian Island Humpback Whale Sanctuary, working for our own DLNR, Richard Isla's office. And, of course, Dr. Charles Lippman, lead scientist on the monk seal for NOAA Fisheries. Did I get that right, Charles?
You got that right.
Carly, take it away.
Thanks, Jeff, and love your colorful personality and show. I really just want to use these experts we have today to share with the community some of their important knowledge about marine science and conservation. And going back to what we were talking about with marine protected areas, I think, you know, Rob, Charles, Aaliyah, you guys all have so much experience in what you do and contribute in different ways to protecting our oceans. So why don't you tell our listeners, Rob, let's start with you a little bit how you do that.
So my research focuses primarily on trying to understand where the next generation is going to come from if we're harvesting. And the real challenge with that is that most marine species, when they reproduce, they produce these tiny little babies. They're microscopic things called larvae that float around in the ocean, and we can't track them, we can't follow them. So what we end up doing is using what you guys see on CSI, the genetic DNA fingerprinting, and we ask the question, where are they coming from? And that tells us then something about where the next generation is coming from. How do we go about managing it? Do we need to know locally or the whole archipelago?
And then again, from the fisherman's point of view, you're trying to protect our stocks so that they'll reproduce and not be overfished, correct?
So the idea is if you look at a fish and its grandparents, its great-grandparents, all of them come from Oahu, then that means if you catch all the big fish, there's none left here on Oahu to produce the next generation. You're not going to be able to catch anything. If the grandparents are on Kure Atoll or Midway and the parents are on Kauai and the Keiki are here, then that means that there's a good chance that we'll have spillover from another island and that we'll replenish if we catch them here.
Well, okay, Carly, this is your question. obviously, these little microscopic babies don't swim very well or far, so we're just relying 100% on currents to transmigrate these people, correct?
That's what people thought for a long time, but it turns out that that's not really true, that they're actually very good swimmers. And in fact, the Hawaiian archipelago is a volcanic island chain that's popped up in the middle of the ocean, and we're a long way from anything. Everything that's here in Hawaii has to have come here from somewhere else. And so actually all of these things are capable of swimming over very long distances and making it to the Hawaiian archipelago. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here.
Flat out. So, where do our fish stocks come from? Do they come from the main islands and go north, or do they come from up north and come back here?
So the vast majority of them are coming from the main islands and heading north. So most of the data that we have at this point, we've now looked at about 60 species of coral reef fishes, corals, the invertebrates that live on reefs, and the vast majority of the exchange is coming from the mains to the northwest. But having said that, in fact, most of it looks like it is local, and it's essentially island by island. So for some of the things, like some of the coral species that we look at, 98% of the recruits, the new generation that's showing up, comes from the same island as the parents are found on.
And since there's so much exchange between the main and northwestern Hawaiian Islands, you know, we have to really look at that when we are protecting our waters. And, you know, for the monk seals, for example, Charles, let's talk about that. I mean, we've seen monk seals are more frequently now in the main Hawaiian Islands, and that's a huge management headache for you guys. How are you trying to work with that?
That's a good question. So we're dealing with something quite interesting about with monk seals about up in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, where most of the population lives. As Rob pointed out, it's a very strongly protected area. The population is crashing and has been declining for quite a while. And then maybe about 15 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, we started to really start to see monk seals showing up in the main Hawaiian Islands. And this population in a relatively unprotected, lots of human use, a lot of boat activities, ocean user activities. The monk seal seems to be doing great. Numbers are increasing down here. The animals are in good condition. Survival is really high. But of course, that's great for the population and conserving it, but offers up a whole new host of management challenges trying to create coexistence with...
All right, let's get this clean and simple.
Okay.
It's easier for them to exist down here where we've got humans that have overfished more.
Yep.
And we've got, like you mentioned, a human activity, including the boats, noise in the water, or whatever you want to call it. Why would it be, and then what's wrong with up north where there are relatively few humans, if any at all, and a huge ecosystems, huge biodiversity? Why are these seals not doing well up there and they're doing better here?
We're still researching to figure out all of the angles on that, but right now what we think is happening is monk seals being a tropical seal species, they're the only one in the world that is solely tropical. It's a hard place to be for a marine mammal. So they've got lots of competition up there with the huge Alua that are up there, the new, you know, a lot of biomass of sharks and large apex predators, these top fish. And we think that sometimes the system, climate, whatever you want to call it, makes it harder for monk seals to make a living, and they start competing with all of these other apex predators, and they just can't compete.
Okay, in civilian talk, there's a whole lot of big tiger sharks up north.
Yep.
Take my word for it.
Oh, I know.
I'm petrified to go in the water after they come by and just ravage your lines and your boat, and right up next to the boat, we're talking 16, 18 feet. You're petrified to go in the water mainly. I don't know how you guys do it, by the way.
Carefully.
You often don't know what I know. And then, and of course, the Alua, there's a million times more of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they're big. They're over 100 pounds, lots of them. And so there's just too much competition on the top of the food chain. Is that it?
Yeah, pretty much. And
hasn't it always been that way? How'd they manage to get to where they were up there in a healthy population if it was always like that?
Well, so that's the interesting thing. What we're learning from things like genetics that folks in Rob's lab have done is that monk seals show a really low degree of genetic variability. And in layman's terms, that just means one monk seal genetically looks much like another. And what it indicates is that... to get to that low variability, the population has had to have shrunk and grown and shrunk and grown time and time again. So there's all these little bottlenecks, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. Rob is the expert. And so what we're starting to think is that monk seals have always kind of been on the edge in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, at least, and they show a lot of resilience. They're always able to recover, but it's just it's not an always perfect balance for monk seals.
And you guys have an impressive long-term data set of research. I mean, you guys have been sending people out there for years and years. In fact, you're sending some people out this week, I believe.
Knock on wood, we're waiting for our ship to depart to take our summer field camps up to the Northwest. And when we're up there, we're monitoring all of the threats to the seals and trying to figure out ways to help them survive, monitor declines or increases. Right.
And from a marine mammal perspective, you know, from ones that aren't doing as well to ones that are doing very well, Aaliyah, why don't you tell us a little bit about the whale sanctuary and how you guys are working to expand that after...
Because the dummy suggested we run a few over with boats because there's too many of them. That's politically incorrect. But my question before we let go of Rob was... I'm sorry, for Charles. My question was, why the hoopla about... Actually, your guys' idea, if I'm not mistaken, is to go up north, catch them, and bring them back to these main Hawaiian Islands and try and build up the population, correct?
Yeah, it's a little more complicated than that, but yeah.
Let me ask somebody else on the panel who's not a seal hugger. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? Anybody got an idea on that? Carly? Leah?
Sure, I'll jump in. I mean, I think when you have a situation where the seals are as imperiled as they are, you need to be creative. You need to do creative management. But that also obviously needs to be balanced with the needs of people. And people are part of the ecosystem,
right.
So those communities.
One of your UH people wrote a letter to the editor. He's not a Marine guy. I forgot who he is. I've got him on my phone somewhere. Tried to get a hold of him. He dodged it all. But the letter said, screw that. These seals are going to bite us. They're going to steal our fish. They're going to interfere with our tourism, on and on and on. What say you to that, Dr. Charles Litton?
I think those are understandable concerns.
Really? They're going to bite surfers?
No, I think they're understandable concerns. I didn't say that I necessarily agree with them. So we don't have a lot of records. I mean, muck seals have been here for quite a while now. We've got somewhere 150 or 200. We're not seeing seals attacking people. That's not going to probably change in the future. They tend to mind their own business. We do get a few that get a little
social.
They're
out there on Rabbit Island, you know.
Having babies and stuff.
Getting the suntan.
Yep. And so, so by and large, one of the big things is that's not going to happen when people and seals coexist together. When people behave, they don't feed, you know.
Right, teach them bad habits.
Yeah. And so once there's that balance, and people are getting so good in the last 10 years, the way that the communities have adapted to seals being on the beach and not harassing them and knowing to keep their distance, that's not a concern.
All right. Now, let's go to the ugly thing. Before I go to traffic one more time and we come back and talk with Aaliyah about traffic one more time and we come back and talk with Aaliyah about the whale sanctuary. And then, of course, we'll get to Dr. Rob Tunin about the whole thing. What's the whole thing? That would be the...
I don't know where you're going with that, Jeff. Sorry.
Well, what do you mean? You're the one who said size is important when it came to the
Well, I'm talking about marine protected areas. So, bigger is better.
We'll get back. We'll talk about the whole thing, meaning the Northwest Archipelago and how it all ties together. Mm-hmm. And Cardi's going to help us with that. What about people killing monk seals, shooting them specifically?
So in the last couple of years, we have seen... a couple of periods where we suddenly you get multiple animals being killed on different islands.
Kauai guy was caught, wasn't he?
Yep.
By some tourists.
There was.
And what was that idiot doing? The same thing somebody's doing on Molokai right now. Repeat offenders killing monk seals, I presume, for competing with their fish stocks. Molokai is well known for hunting and gathering, subsistence living off the lamb. Somebody starts shooting seals. It seems they're not taking them home and smoking them. Right? Eating them.
Right.
Seems like the only thing is that they feel that these seals are competing with their fishery. What do you say?
Yeah, we're not trying to guess on who's done it, but we do know that there are a lot of concerns with different community members. Fishermen are a good group that talks about their concerns with seals and fish.
Why not blame Walter Riddy? He's an easy target. Walter, are you shooting, Uncle Walt, you shooting those seals, Rob?
He works really hard as an advocate for monk seals, mm-hmm. You know, and understanding and appreciating the importance of all natural resources mm-hmm. in the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Well, and Walter's a great advocate for the seals as well as the marine environment as a whole, but here's where the DLNR and my boss, Chairman William Isla, you know, we're trying to partner with NOAA to help with this monk seal issue in that, you know, if people, fishermen or others, are having problems, there are numbers they can call. They can call the DLNR. They can call NOAA, and we can work with them to help figure out how to mitigate that. So help come up with techniques to keep the seals away from those fishermen. So you don't have to...
You're using public taxpayers' money to help find a way to trap a seal. Is that what you just said?
To help what?
How are you going to do this now? Here's this bad shoplifting seal.
Well, this is where
seal.
I'm going to call
like
on Charles again.
It's like a shoplifting seal. You're going to catch this thing.
So NOAA's been working to develop techniques on all of these kinds of things to help reduce those interactions.
Well, I think we'd go back a step and say, and this is where the research program comes in, is first, there's a lot of myths and misconceptions out there. There's a lot of talks about discussion about how seals are eating all of these resources and interacting with all these fisheries. And so much of it is anecdote because we don't have that chain of communication between the state, the fishers, and the federal government. And my program is developing first ways to try to really determine how bad those interactions are and what impacts monk seals are having, and trying to work with fishermen to study these different things. Then with that step, we can start to develop, are there simple best practices that a fisherman can do to just pull his line out if a seal's swimming by? All the way up to, if there is a chronically bad seal that is...
like a bad bear.
Well, it's very similar to that. That is becoming a danger to itself. Interacting with fisheries is not mm-hmm. good for a seal.
Right.
Becoming a danger to itself or to the fishermen, and that information is coming to us, it gives us the ability to try different things. So we can try deterrence. If we have to, we can move it. We've done these sorts of translocations before. So there's options, but until we start having that dialogue and learning what's really going on,
it's just ironic to me, but not surprising that, like little children, we're pointing a finger at the seals why we go out and destroy the whole environment ourselves as human beings. Really smart. We have opposable digits on our hands. We have these huge cerebral cortex. We're very capable of wiping everything out, and yet we're worried about the seals eating too many fish. Blah blah blah. What do you say, Carly?
Well, I just, you know, I think the other thing too, that education is so important, and what's the nice thing about all these different agencies, both state and federal, is that they are coming to the public. They are working with communities. They are open for conversations and making themselves available, exposing the research. And that's the most important thing, is so people know what these guys are doing and how hard they're working, both from a management and science perspective. And that's critical.
Well, I'd be curious to see, on another note, what the whales do for tourism in Hawaii.
They do quite a lot.
And at what point would the seals start having an impact if there was enough on them, on tourism? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
That's a great question, and it's something that our managers are actually working on and working with the state on, is to try to get a dollar sign for because people do come here. They tell us that they're coming here for monk seals.
I heard they were selling more stuffed fur seals at the aquarium than they were stuffed furry whales.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Charles, it's on now.
It's because seals are sexy.
I knew I could get some. Oh, by the way, these seals are not from Hawaii, you know. Somebody imported those. Did you know that?
I will. I will dive over this
hole
counter.
In your bubble.
They are 100% indigenous, native, from Hawaii.
Well, imported. And we can't ignore Rob, too. You know, let's just not focus on the charismatic megafauna. There are some pretty freaking cute opihi out there and other types of invertebrates as well, right?
Yeah, and that's the OPHI are one of the projects that we've been spending a lot of time in our group on recently, and one of the things that I'm really happy about is this effort. We have now a Facebook page, the OPHI Partnership, where anyone can get involved with, and that basically what we've got now are our community members all across the state who are actually going out and doing their own OPHI surveys to get the data for the state, so that we can try and get them to compare among communities. Well, we're trying this management scheme, and this is what's happening. And our OPHI stocks are coming back, and you guys are trying this management scheme, and it isn't working so well. Right. So
it's huge. It doesn't sound like much, the little lowly OPHI, but as far as cultural food and gathering and whatnot, if it's not managed, and which it obviously was way back in the day when we didn't have a cell phone, to say the least, radio, gasoline, airplanes, Matson. People who really respect the Aina and know how to manage it basically are Hawaiians or somebody who went to school like you guys.
Well, and that's really where the sanctuary is starting to look, is how can we support projects like what Rob's
doing. Let's talk about that when I come back.
Fun.
Carly, you pay attention, because this is what you're going to have to do when you're my co-host. I'm out to traffic. In that case, the music starts. There you go. And we think there are some more of our sponsors. That would be NELHA and Natural Energy Laboratory Hawaii Authority. That's the big Disneyland of energy out there by the Kona Airport. They are our sponsors of our show. In fact, Guy Toyama will be calling me right after this show to schedule his. They'll be handling a couple of our shows a month, which is a beautiful thing for your solar guy. You can get to work. I'd also like to thank Tom Moffitt. Great interview with him the other night. And, of course, he's got Melissa Etheridge coming in. Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods. You heard me. I'm a partner in that, in the sense that we are replanting koa. We're going to try and replant the cloud forests, currently beginning in Big Island. You can have a legacy tree in your name or somebody's name. It's planted. It's there forever. And it's a concept, reforestation as opposed to deforestation. I'd like to thank Sabrina's Restaurant. Aloha. I'd like to thank Green Sun Hawaii. Probably hear their ad right here. These are the folks that will credit enhancement loans to make your PV purchase more affordable. All these folks on my website, Hawaii with an S, tomorrow.com, hawaiistomorrow.com. Your solar guy, Jeff, and I shall return. Aloha.
Hawaii's Business Authority.
Going west, the H1 slows on the airport viaduct. The Moanalua slows at Middle Street. The Moanalua is extra slow because of an accident earlier at the Pu'uloa exit. After the Halava merge, traffic continues slow to Sears. If you're heading up the leeward coast, HFD and HPD are asking drivers to stay away from the wildfire area of Waianae. The area is inland from Waianae along Haleahi Road.
Want to go green for your home or business? Hawaii Community Reinvestment Corporation introduces its new Green Sun Hawaii program, an innovative public-private partnership to make energy improvements affordable for everyone. Green Sun Hawaii gives you the power to significantly reduce your utility bill. Visit Hawaii National Bank or other participating lenders or one of the many authorized energy contractors for more information. Or visit greensunhawaii.com and click on the easy-to-use loan application.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to my dad, the solar guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
This is Chief Louis Kealoha of the Honolulu Police Department. As part of the HPD's Safer Roads program, our officers are enforcing traffic laws 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. But we need your help. A few common sense choices can make a big difference. Stay within posted speed limits, use a hands-free cell phone device when driving, look out for pedestrians, and have a designated driver if you drink. Together, we can make Oahu's road safer and save lives. Aloha.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Aloha, welcome back to Hawaii's Tomorrow, and something fishy in the house. That's because I've got my marine biologist, marine health, and my marine educator, Ms. Carly Weiner, in the house. Basically, I'm going to have her in once a month to help us keep abreast of the fact that we live in an archipelago. It's easy to forget if you're not ocean-minded, but without the health of our ocean around us, we will not have a healthy land, so to speak. Right?
I'm happy to be your marine.
There you go.
Here and
yeah,
talk
Aaliyah
a little
Herman,
bit.
State co-manager, Hawaiian Island Humpback Whale. You gotta remember now, some people tune in and out as we go. You gotta reintroduce our guests. Again, we've got three top of the line. Charles Littman, he's the monk seal lead scientist for NOAA. We've got Aaliyah Herman, she's the co-manager for the Hawaiian Island Humpback. She's DLNR. And we're just gonna also be hearing some more from Rob Tunin, associate researcher for the Northwest Archipelago and the Papahanua Mokuakea.
Or the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology.
Okay, Cardi, take it away.
Excellent. So let's chat, Aaliyah. I really want to dive, no pun intended, more into the sanctuary and find out, you guys are changing your direction a little bit. What's going on with you guys?
Thanks, Carly. That is sort of the million-dollar question. So, yeah, we've been a humpback whale sanctuary for the last 20 years, but when we were established in 1992, there was a bit of the legislation that said, in the future, consider adding additional resources of national significance. And since that time, we've had support from actually all of the governors, Cayetano, Lingle, and now Abercrombie, to look at doing that. And so this sort of the timing is right. And right now we're looking at how can we move from being just a humpback whale sanctuary to something more, to an ecosystem-based sanctuary, to a Hawaiian sanctuary that really embodies the culture, the people, the needs here, so brings people into the mix and looks at how we can manage more holistically and how we can support everything from the kind of stuff that Rob is doing with Opihi and fish to keep working on the humpback whales, supporting Charles.
Who didn't say the turtle word? The lovely Loli Honua, Honu.
Honu.
Right? They're sweet and cuddly, too. They sell a lot of stuffed honus.
I mean, more honus than whales.
But honus aren't they already part of the whale sanctuary?
Right now, the whale sanctuary is just about humpback whales.
How long will it be before you guys have stepped into this new stewardship regarding seals or turtles?
Well, seals are just one example. So it's just additional resources, and so that's and the habitat. So it could even be looking at things like water quality, corals, all of these pieces. And so we're in the middle of that process right now. And there's still a lot of opportunity for input. We've had 2 years of public input. We've had experts come together to make recommendations on a whole suite of issues, from Native Hawaiian culture and maritime heritage issues to water quality to humpback whales. And now we're in the process where really we're looking at the data, we're consulting agencies and experts to try to figure out what makes sense here in Hawaii, what are the gaps, where can we add value, and how can the sanctuary help protect Hawaii's marine resources. So how can the sanctuary help the state?
Now, Aaliyah, you said a key word here that I think is really important that we need to go back to, and that's ecosystem-based management. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people may not know what ecosystem-based management
sounds like.
Is.
Something you have to go to school to learn how that means.
Well, it's very simple. It's not looking at one particular species. It's looking at the ecosystem or the entire habitat as a whole. And Rob, you have a lot of experience working in ecosystem-based management. You know, you've been the lead program director, program principal investigator for the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands Partnership, and you, along with many other scientists at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, have been doing ecosystem-based science to help inform the management. What's that experience like? What kind of research does that involve?
So I guess what you said is the key point is that we're stopping thinking about a single species, because this is something that Native Hawaiians practice it for their entire history of management. The Ahupua'a system is based basically ecosystem-based management, and that is that everything is connected, and whatever you do on land it has impacts in the sea, and whatever you do to one species has ramifying impacts on a lot of other species that they interact with. And what we need to do is move away from this traditional sort of Western fisheries approach where we say we're going to catch opakapaka and this is how many we're going to catch, and assume that that has no impact on anything else, because opakapaka eat things and they're eaten by things. They're part of a gigantic food web, and we need to know what is going on to that entire food web.
Let me ask you, with the tax dollars of the people driving home right now, hardcore results, actual known applications, or are you still at the very infancy of this science?
Well, I think some of the hardcore results that we have at this point is there was a lot of hope when Papahanao Mokuakea was established that we would have set aside this large marine protected area in the northwest, and it would rain down fisheries recruits on the main, and that we would be able to essentially fish away down here. And what we've found out is that's not the case, and in fact that most of the islands are essentially self-seeding. And what that really means is it doesn't relieve the responsibility of anyone from managing their backyard. And again, this is a traditional Hawaiian practice.
How long did
practice.
It take for you folks to figure that out?
It took about 5 years of work with a very large group, and we've now looked at over 60 species of fishes, invertebrates, corals, for an ecosystem-based approach. We're not looking at one species. We're looking at 60 very common species across the entire archipelago, and we can say that about 80% of the species has show breaks island by island, and that there's not very much exchange. If you're counting on fisheries, so if we look at a concrete example, let's say koele, one of the opihi species on the island of Kauai. The last time one of them came from somewhere else was on the order of 100,000 years ago. So if we pick them all out, we're going to wait 100,000 years ago for those things to show up again. Well, that means something really important for people who are talking about opihi management. If you don't look after the resources on your own island, you're not going to see them for your great-grandchildren's life ever coming back.
And that's something actually that fits in really well with what the sanctuary is looking at, because as we've been traveling, talking to communities island to island, I think the number one thing I hear is, I'm from Kauai, so I'm not going to tell anyone on Maui what to do, and like they better not tell me what to do. And it's very local-based. That's how the Hawaiians have always done it, and how, you know, people realize that on the ground, and now the science is supporting that. So the sanctuary goes across the different islands. We're in the Maui Nui region. We have a piece on Kauai. We have a couple places on Oahu and the Big Island. But it's non-contiguous, and we need to look at, on the island basis and also the community basis, what are the management needs in those local areas? Because as the science is showing and Native Hawaiian traditional knowledge is showing, it's very local.
You know, I bring in a lot of people from a lot of different areas, and a good example is Hawaii Energy. They're the energy rebate folks here. When I bring them in, then I change the subject and I want to talk politics in general. They're very unable to do so because they have a job and they can't take their hat off. And then I've got four people that have spent so many hours in their lives and their dedication, hearts and dreams on their education for this particular subject that you guys are in love with, obviously. And when I come back from this last break, it's a quick one, I want to hear from you guys, and take your hats off. I want to hear from you how you put together everything you've heard in the halls of academia and your time out up north, for instance, Rob, or whatever you guys have done. I would like to hear from your point of view, less science and more opinion, how we could, in our dreams, manage the Hawaiian Islands. And just some common sense stuff, right? I mean, right off the top of your heads, and then we'll go back into the various detail and minutiae that you guys are so spend so much time collecting. Is that okay with you, Carly?
Yeah, sure. Let's do
it. It's your show, Jeff.
It's your show.
Okay, my last break, and it's a quickie. Let's see what's going on in traffic out there. By the way, traffic's in good shape because UH is out. So much. You know what? Again, I'm apolitical, non-denominational, but when the city council did not put a vote on the bill for an election that we're having now of whether or not the general public wanted rail or not, and they said, we know what's good for you, folks. It's not about you. It's not, you're not, we don't work for you. We will take care of you like cattle. That angered me. Made me mad as hell, not want to take it anymore. I'm going out to break. I'd like to thank a few more folks. For instance, Nanotech, that's the glass restorative treatment that make your PV panels come out. I heard of something today that a PV panel came out from the market from China that has thermal combined with PV, and either way, it's heat your water as well as makes electricity. My only problem, it's going to really screw up the tax credits since we've got thermal credits and we've got PV credits. Kona Red, the antioxidant made from coffee fruit. You'll see it everywhere. Aloha. Again, Inter Island Solar Supply. I had a nice talk with Cully today, as I did with R&R Solar Supply. Rolf, again, about the article in the paper claiming that tax credits for solar were bad. It was just about a rich people making out and everybody else bad. We're going to get that sorted out, for better or worse. Again, Hawaii Legacy Hardwoods, thank you so much. I'm your solar guy, Jeff, and aloha. I'll be right back with something fishy. Aloha.
Hawaii's Business Authority.
It's slow going west, especially on the Moanalua. There was an accident earlier on the Moanalua Evabound at the Pu'uloa exit, and the Moanalua is backed up to Middle Street. The H1 still backed up along the west end of the airport viaduct, but looking normal. If you're coming into town from the west, expect to slow down just after Middle Street. No problems to the windward side, and we're looking fairly normal if you're headed out east to Hawaii Kai.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Aloha. It's your solar guy, Jeff Davis, with a sure bet for you and your family. If you or someone you know believes they are living in a neighborhood that has no room on the grid to install more photovoltaics to erase your electricity bill, I can do it. I will guarantee to get your home approved by HECO, or I'll give you $100. Again, if you need PV on your home and you're under the impression that your neighborhood or your grid is full to saturation, I, Jeff Davis, the solar guy, can get your home installed and connected to HECO's net metering program, or I'll give you a $100 call-off bill. You just call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200, 554-7200. Aloha.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to My Dad, the Solar Guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Aloha. Welcome back to Hawaii's Tomorrow. Again, my co-host, Carly Weiner. She's going to be my marine biology, marine health educator here. That's your job, Carly, your job, Center for Ocean Sciences, Education Excellence, you and 14 other centers around America, to do what I figured out a long time ago needed doing, bringing academia in touch with the public. Thank you for that.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, by the way, I've got a caller. He's going to have to make it like the quickest call he ever made in his life, but thanks for calling in, Lester from Kailua.
Hey, solar guy, how you doing?
I'm fine, Esther. How about yourself?
Good. Having a good day. Can't see Venus today.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Did you have a question for my esteemed panel?
Yeah, I wanted to ask that Rob Tonin guy. He said something about how everything in Hawaii has to come from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Where do they come from?
From aliens. You didn't hear that part of the show? How about this? The dummy might try a shot at it. Ocean currents, people navigating, they fly here, little bugs on a bird that flies here, they fly over on things that are floating, like when the tsunami wipes out some part of the world and all this stuff floats around the ocean for years and years at a time. Let me hear from the experts.
All right.
Yeah, and that's essentially correct. That we have
You can come back to my show.
We have a lot of different places where organisms have colonized the Hawaiian archipelago from. So there are some of them that have come from the Line Islands up into Hawaii. Some of the species look like they have hopscotched across islands like Johnson Atoll into the archipelago. And some other species look like they've come in from Japan riding the Kuroshio Current up north into the northwest and picking up around Kure and Midway.
Yeah, I never thought about it until all this stuff came out on the trash coming out of the tsunami, but that's just a living raft giving any type of an animal. You could literally get mammals to survive long enough, perhaps, on these huge rafts of tsunami debris.
And there's volcanic eruptions where you get these huge pumice fields that can be the size of
that
football fields that are floating rocks that will mm-hmm. go across as well. And so you have a lot of opportunities for organisms to colonize.
And, who knows? Maybe the Atlantis myth is not a myth. In fact, that we made so much plastic and garbage that we filled our ocean up with garbage and everything just walked across. How about that? Okay. Does that answer your question, Lester? Thanks for calling in. You catch Carly coming up here next month or at the end of this one. And you'll have more time to give a call in, which appreciate that. Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay, Cardi.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, with such a great panel here, I thought the last thing we could talk about today is really exploring why conservation is important. And, you know, you said you wanted to get a little bit away from the science, but the science is kind of what drives the conservation to some extent. And, you know, in a perfect world, what would you guys like to see happen here in the main Hawaiian Islands? Charles, let's start with you, the monk seals. What can we do to make the monk seals happy?
Well, I was hoping to go last.
Besides hug them.
Yeah, less hugging, actually. Hawaii is a beautiful, unique ecosystem, and I hate to be always having to focus solely on monk seals. They are a wonderfully unique ancient species found only here, only come from here. They are Hawaiian, and a critical or important, valuable part of the ecosystem, and I think it's just what we all want, and I hope I don't steal your answers, is a healthy system, healthy for people so that they have the food that they need, so they can swim and do all the recreational activities that they want.
Wow.
And healthy for the animals that live there.
Maybe it's politically incorrect to say it, because he's beaten around the bush. Basically, I'm afraid it involves controlling people's behavior.
Well, I mean, that's not the vision that I have as one that's about controlling
no more
people's
fishing,
behavior.
No more net fishing. No,
to me, the goal
restrictions on everything. Restriction. Isn't that what it comes down to?
What I want to see is, and what we are seeing more and more is really community-driven management, where you have on a very local level. You see it in places like Hanalei and Haena and Kauai. You see it in Puako and Kiholo on the Big Island, where those communities are identifying what do we need in our little bay or our little area to make sure that our resources are perpetuated into the future. And they are coming up with suggestions, sometimes rules, but sometimes not, creative enforcement ideas where they're hiring rangers and coming up with sort of self-enforcement policies. So, I mean, the vision that I see, and you know, again, and it's reinforced by the science and the communities, that every place is different. Every, you know, the Hawaiians, the moon calendars are different from bay to bay. Calendars that tell us about when to fish and when fish are reproductively viable. They're different everywhere on this very local level, and the more that can be community driven, the community can say this is what we need to protect our resources,
again,
the more successful we're going to be, because without that buy-in, without the local desire to protect those resources for the future, we're not going to get anywhere.
But isn't it a buy-in of human activity and a penalty for those who get caught breaking the rules?
But if that community wants the protection, if I'm a fisherman in that community and I know I want to fish tomorrow and I want my son and my granddaughter to fish, then I'm going to think about how I fish now. I'm going to fish at the right
voluntary
times.
Voluntary understanding.
Yeah, because it's what benefits me. If it's, you know, if I know that if I behave in a certain way, then that's going to benefit me and my community into the future, then, you know, I bet, you know, am I staring at the guy next to me and he's breaking the rules, he's going to think twice about it because he's my neighbor.
I tell you what, Carly, we're out of time now.
Wow. Well, yep. Sorry,
we're coming
Rob.
Back. Again, I believe that the Marine subjects are huge for all the right reasons. They're huge for people who live in Idaho. But for us living in Hawaii, it should be right in your face. Thank you all for coming in and helping scratch the surface.
Thank you
and
very
like
much.
I said, we're
Thank
bringing
you.
Fewer guests in the future so we can get deeper into some of these subjects. But this was a great opening, basically, a big blast. I'm on my way out. Literally, Carly, thank you again.
Thanks, Jeff.
And I'm your solar guy, Jeff Davis. And if you need me on this, you call me at 554-7200 tomorrow. Mr. Paul Cortez, Vice Consul for the Philippine Consul. On Thursday, Institute for Human Services will be back. And on Friday, both Ed Case and Melita Zimmerman from Hawaii Reporter will be in the house. You know, I love my job. And thank you all. 554-7200 if you have any ideas. No kooks allowed. Aloha.